This is The Naked Scientist with me, Ben Valsler, and with Kat Arney, who's joining us this week from the NCRI conference in Liverpool. Still to come, Diana O'Carroll will ask if wearing sunglasses helps to keep your eyes healthy in our question of the week.
But first, I'm joined by Madhusudan Srinivasan. He's Clinical Associate Professor in Medical Oncology at the University of Nottingham, and he'll be presenting a paper at the NCRI conference this week about a new target for cancer drugs, and that's blocking the DNA repair mechanism. Good evening. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Kate.
So let's start by going a bit back to basics. Why do cells need to repair damage to their DNA? How do they get damaged and why do they repair?
Well, that's a very important question, Kat. If you look at a normal cell, we all know DNA is the building block of life. Sequence in the DNA makes genes. Genes make proteins. But the problem is, in normal cells, the cells are constantly producing damaging agents. These are called oxygen-free radicals. These free radicals can actually damage the DNA. If they damage the DNA, the genes can get corrupted, and that can make abnormal proteins. In order to avoid this situation, what normal cells do is they're constantly scanning the DNA. We call this a scanning the genome to maintain stability of the DNA. And DNA repair pathways are critical for maintaining this genomic stability.
So there's damage to DNA created by just the processes going on in cells, but presumably also from other things like cigarette smoke or ultraviolet light from the sun, things that we know damage DNA and cause cancer.
Absolutely right. So what I spoke to you about was endogenous DNA damaging agents, and you have exogenous DNA damaging agents. And the most important ones are environmental agents. Smoking is a main culprit. There are environmental toxins such as lead, industrial toxins. Now, these hydrocarbons, as we call them, can actually directly damage DNA. And when the damaged DNA happens, the bases get corrupted, and that leads to what's called as mutations. And it is the mutations that drive the cancerous phenotype.
So we've got this DNA repair going on, but when we get damaged, then we can get cancer. But also, what's gone wrong with the DNA repair in cancer cells? Because DNA repair is also a bit messed up in some types of cancer, isn't it?
That's right. In fact, the relationship between DNA repair and cancer is quite complex. On the one hand, suboptimal DNA repair can actually increase the risk of cancer. It can lead to a cancerous phenotype. On the other hand, certain tumors actually upregulate DNA repair. And when they upregulate DNA repair, what they do is it gives them a selective survival advantage. And it also makes them resistant to certain treatments that we use in the clinic.
So things like radiotherapy that damage DNA in cancer cells and make them die, they would become resistant to that kind of treatment.
That's correct. It's radiation therapy and also several chemotherapeutic agents that we use in the clinic.
So some of the drugs that you would treat them, they actually become resistant because they're repairing the damage that's being aimed
Absolutely
at them to
right.
kill them. So talk a little bit about your research. So you're studying a particular repair pathway in cancer cells and in healthy cells as well. Tell me a bit about that and what's going on with that.
Okay. So mammalian cells, that's human cancer cells, have several DNA repair pathways. We know there are at least 6 different DNA repair pathways in man. One of the DNA repair in that is called base excision repair. And this particular pathway is absolutely essential for maintaining the correct bases in your DNA.
The specific letters of the instructions.
Absolutely. So they are absolutely essential to maintain the letter, keep the script going. Okay. So that's the base excision repair. Now, this base excision repair was discovered about 20 to 30 years ago. And over the last decade or so, we know a lot about base excision repair. What are the proteins involved in base excision repair, how the process is coordinated. One of the proteins that my lab is focused on is a protein called human AP endonuclease. It's also called APE1. This particular protein is very essential for base excision repair. And work in our laboratory, which has been going on for the past 5 to 6 years, is trying to understand what this protein does in normal cells, what this protein does in cancer cells, and how can we exploit for cancer treatment in patients.
So here at the conference, you're presenting some really exciting data where you've been trying to block this particular protein that's involved in this DNA repair. And what do you see when you block this?
Okay. So what we have been trying to do in the laboratory is first understand what's happening to this particular protein in tumors. And what we see is APE1 is frequently overexpressed in tumors.
So it's working too hard.
Okay. And also the tumor cells are overexpressing it so that they can try and circumvent other damages and continue to survive and lead to resistance to treatments. So that's one thing that we've understood from studies in human tumors. Then what we have gone on to do is, now that we know that this protein is very essential for cancer cells, we've actually established a drug discovery program to try and block this particular protein. So we isolated what's called a small molecule inhibitors of APE1.
These are little tiny drugs.
Little tiny drugs, compounds to be precise, that block the functioning of APE1. The next stage in our research has been to try and exploit novel treatment strategies to try and define which group of patients would actually benefit from APE1 inhibitors. And that's what we are presenting tomorrow, and I'm really excited about that, because this new field in cancer called stratified medicine and personalized cancer medicine, where we can actually look at tumor biology and then tell our patients in the clinic that this is the treatment that you're going to have. Kat, one of the problems that I face in the clinic when I see a patient is, before I start the treatment, there is no way in which I could know whether chemotherapy is going to work or radiotherapy is going to work or not. For the first time in the last 3 years, we actually have tools where we can actually predict who might be able to respond to treatment and who may not be able to respond to treatment. This is in its very early phase, and over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see a huge explosion in this personalized cancer treatment. And the research that we are presenting tomorrow is exactly in personalized cancer treatment approaches, where looking at tumor biology, we can actually target our APE1 inhibitors for treatment.
So what particular types of patients or types of cancers might these drugs be suitable for?
So when you look at personalized cancer treatment, we believe that APE1 inhibitors are particularly going to be beneficial in breast cancer, in ovarian cancer, in pancreatic cancers. Now, a proportion of these tumors, up to 10 to 20% of these tumors, they're deficient in a particular gene called the BRCA genes. And what we know is, if we can identify those tumors, studies in our laboratories have suggested that APE1 inhibitors are likely to be particularly sensitive to those tumors.
So you could do a test for a person with that type of cancer and say, okay, you have a fault in this BRCA gene, and then you might benefit from this type of therapy. How close are we to actually being testing these drugs in clinical trials?
That's a very, very important question. And as you know, drug discovery is a long, drawn, expensive process. And, the stage we are in at the moment is what's called as hit-to-lead conversion.
So it's very early still.
It's very early, but potentially very exciting. So I think what our long-term, medium-term to long-term strategy is usually get a pharmaceutical partner and try and drive this research program for patient benefit.
So at the moment, this is just still in the lab. You're trying to find the best kind of thing to take forward to develop into a drug.
We're still fine-tuning the structures of the compounds so that we can decide which one to take forwards. You're quite right.
Well, that's really exciting stuff as well. So thank you very much. That's Madhusudan Srinivasan from the University of Nottingham.
Bringing the facts to bear. The Naked Scientists.